Hello, listeners. Welcome from Tashkent, Uzbekistan. It's Gregor Winter together with Ned Aram from Hook Grip. And yeah, Ned, say hello.
How's it going, everyone? Been a long time since we've done a podcast, but we're back.
Yeah, the podcast train has come to a little halt, intermediate halt.
Well, now it's restarting.
Yeah, it's restarting. Yeah. It's going. Everybody on a podcast train.
The wheels are creaking, but they're moving.
A little bit rusty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, welcome. We are back in Uzbekistan.
Hello, listeners.
Last time we've been here was in 2018 for Junior Worlds. Same venue.
Well, technically, Hook Grip was here in 2020 for Asian Youth and Juniors, which was really, I believe, the last major, I would call major international meet pre-pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, the Malta Open, which I wouldn't really, I mean, I'm not trying to bash anyone who was in the Malta Open.
It was a silver-level event.
It was a silver-level event, but talking, like, and it was the last continental or, like, world-level event. So mm-hmm. Asian Youth and Juniors was here at the same venue in Tashkent in February 2020.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who works for me from Spain came to it.
Nice.
And so he got some good footage, did a good job. He actually always does a good job. And he came to that. So technically that was, I would say, the last, like, you know, like, big event. You know, the thing, here's the reason I don't call, like, Malta a big event. Because there were good lifters in Malta. But it's kind of like, I don't know if, like, fake event is the right word for it. But it's an event that wouldn't exist without the Olympic qualification, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like, you know,
I see what you mean.
I would say Roma Cup is in the same category.
Yeah.
And that Roma Cup had Lasha and Toma and all these people, but to me it's still kind of like a bit of like a fake event.
Yeah.
Not that it's like the numbers don't count or not this or not that, but it's basically an event that didn't exist. It was really
made up for the qualification to work out.
It was made up so people could get in their six events, which, once again, I'm not saying is a bad thing, because if we tried to run the Olympic qualification where people could only go to, like, you know, continentals and worlds, then that would be a bad thing. So obviously I'm glad they made up events, but I guess all I'm saying is it was the last, like, kind of like normal event that happened before the pandemic.
Yeah, and then a pandemic happens. It's still happening.
I mean, some places don't believe it's happening. it's still going on, maybe, you know, more than ever in some places.
That's true.
You know, it's very weird because, like, in certain parts of the world, they really didn't even have it, like in, you know, Taiwan and like New Zealand has had, like, a couple scares with, like, you know, where they've, like, detected a few cases and certain areas of the country will go into lockdown. But, you know, most of the time New Zealand hasn't really had to deal with much of a actual, you know, pandemic in their country, and Taiwan's had it almost non-existent. And then, you know, some other places have had it minimally, some other places have had it really badly, some other places have been kind of, you know, so. Some people believe it, some people don't believe it. You know.
Yeah.
Here people have been they just seem very non-concerned with it here.
That's true.
Like, very few people seem in the least bit concerned that, oh, maybe there is a big outbreak going on. Like, you know, some people have said to us, like, oh, you know, cases are really low. It's just not a big concern right now. And and like you said, Uzbekistan did go through a pretty significant lockdown where...
Super strict lockdown.
Miso couldn't leave for 6 months.
Yeah. And that's one when Miso told me Uzbekistan around that time had 7 cases, official cases, confirmed.
Really?
And they locked the country down. Now, I don't know if that's actually true, the number of cases, but it was a low, very low number of cases.
Yeah.
And they locked the country down, so...
But what's interesting is that, now, we've obviously seen other countries that had very few cases that... Here, I'm just going to move this table so Gregor can put the phone down.
So, just to paint a picture, we're in a hotel room, like Ned and I share a hotel room again. And, we're on our beds, and between our beds we have a little table where
so
I'm going to
put the phone down
put
there.
Put the listeners on the little table.
Right, there you go, listeners.
Yeah.
Because Gregor was just holding the phone, so it looked uncomfortable.
You know, like on a Pi Republic pizza box.
Yeah.
From our favorite delivery service.
The thing is, you know, I've seen other countries that kind of had, like, a strict lockdown and then kind of, like, opened up and kind of seemed to be doing okay, sort of thing. like an example would be like parts of Australia had really strict lockdowns and then managed to open up. No, I know Australia's had like varying amounts of pandemic depending on like which essentially state you're in and which timeline you're looking at, but you know, they've had some very strict lockdowns in Australia, and they've also had some time periods where they've managed to get cases very under control, depending on, once again, what time period you're looking at. But the thing about Uzbekistan that's weird to me is that their protocols for, like, checking your test were very loose. Like, I just kind of showed the woman a PDF of my phone. She didn't even really look at it. She just kind of saw that it said negative. She didn't really look at the date on mine, like, because she didn't zoom in. And you can't see the date on, because I have a little, you know, I mean, I have a normal size phone, but I have, you know, a PDF on my phone that has my has my PCR test. And I mean, it was a real test. It, you know, it's not like she missed anything with me in particular.
We're going to come back to this.
Yeah, we'll talk about the test. The tests were a kind of a shit show.
We're
going
to come back to how we arrived.
But she didn't really look at the date on the test. Now, they did look at the date on the test when we were checking in for the flight. They were stricter. They zoomed in and were looking carefully.
And they only do that because the airlines get fined, like $10,000 per person if,
really?
If it's wrong, yeah.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so yeah, they checked pretty strictly at the both checking in and actually getting on the plane from Istanbul to Tashkent. They checked, but the woman at the airport counter did not really check. And the whole process was just crazy because they just, it's basically just a big mob of people. Now, this is after you get off the plane, right before you go through immigration, they have a bunch of desks set up where you run up to them in like a panic. There's no real line set up. You just run up to them in a panic and it's just a mob of people. And you...
No, social distancing, nothing.
Yeah, there's no social distancing whatsoever.
If I was a virus, I would have loved this situation.
Yeah, this is an ideal situation for a virus.
Yeah.
No social distancing. Now, some people are wearing masks. By this point, some people have their masks around their chins.
Or around their ankles.
Yeah, or around their ankles. Like, you know, so I would say, you know, I don't know. I would say, you know, 70% of the people are still wearing a mask at that point. But there's a lot of people that aren't wearing a mask at that point just because they, you know, don't feel like it, I guess. And so you're all crowding around this thing to show the, you know, in my case, it was a woman, but show the woman the, you know, the certificate that you have or the, you know, PDF that you have on your phone. And then she stamps a form that you filled out on the plane. Now, there's a whole bunch of other stuff to talk about. Like the form on the plane says you, and it, I actually could, you know what, we could put it up as a picture because I took a picture of mine.
I put one, took one too.
You took one too? Yeah. Okay, so I would just have to block out some of my personal info, like my address and stuff. But the form basically says a bunch of things. It's like, where are you staying? It's kind of like a normal immigration form in some ways. But then it also says you have to agree to not leave your hotel or place of residence for 14 days, which is exactly how long I'm coming to Uzbekistan for. So, and I'm here obviously to cover this meet, et cetera, et cetera. And so I was just like, and then, by the way, at the bottom, under all that stuff, so basically you filled in like six lines of stuff, which was like, you know, name, date of birth, et cetera, et cetera. And then the seventh part was a thing that said, like, I agree to not leave my hotel, this, blah, 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 for 14 days. And then it said a bunch of other things like, you know, use a mask and change it every 2 hours, which I didn't bring enough masks to do that. You know, and then it just said some other things in there that were fairly reasonable. It was like, you know, stay home if you have like a cough or fever or whatever, which obviously I would do. But then it said you have to, you know, if you don't do this, you will suffer the penalty under like Uzbek law, something, something, some numbers and stuff. And then it had a signature and a date field. And when I saw that, I got the form before Gregor. So when I saw that, I was like, you know what? I was like, I think Gregor's, because Gregor and I were on the same plane. He was just.
Yeah, we met in Istanbul airport.
He was just in a different seat. So I basically was like, uh-oh. I think Gregor's going to panic when he sees this, because Gregor sometimes panics when he sees things like this. And so I was just like, you know, I was like, I should go tell Gregor like what I'm going to do. So basically what I decided my plan was basically, I was just like, I'm just not going to sign the form. I filled out the first six parts that had all my information, everything they wanted. But I just decided I'm just not going to sign that part. And if they give me shit for it when we're going into the country, I'll just tell them, like, no, like, I'm here. Like, my visa is, I don't have a tourism visa. Like, I have a journalist visa, you know, and I have a visa issued by, I mean, it's, you know, it's issued by their foreign ministry, but I have a visa invitation letter from the, like, a stamp visa invitation letter from the Weightlifting Federation here to cover this weightlifting event, and there are hundreds of athletes flying in, none of whom are going to quarantine. So, like, yeah. I would just be like, why am I flying in to quarantine and they wouldn't be flying into quarantine? I was just like, and this doesn't make any sense. On top of the fact that I had checked literally one less than one day before the U.S. Embassy Uzbekistan website, which was basically the U.S. Embassy in Uzbekistan website where they update information for like COVID-19 related travel stuff. Mm. And it said basically, if you're a U.S. citizen and you present a negative PCR test taken within 72 hours, or this was a little confusing. The 72-hour thing is, we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But it said basically, if you have a PCR test taken within 72 hours, you do not have to quarantine.
Exactly.
So I went to the country under what I thought was the correct presumption that I do not have to quarantine. And I was invited under the clear knowledge by, you know, I wasn't trying to like fake a tourism visa or this or that. I was invited under the clear knowledge that I would be going to this event. Obviously being careful, staying away from people, wearing a mask, doing all the, you know, obviously if I have a fever, cough or something, I'm not going to just show up anyway. But like, obviously I'm not going to agree to sign this. So neither Gregor, and I went back to the, you know, where Gregor was sitting and basically said like, hey, you know, I'm just not going to sign it just to let you know what I'm doing. I'm just going to see if they say anything to me, then I'm going to essentially just say, I'm just not going to sign it because I'm not going to, I don't want to be one of those people that said, oh, I signed it. And then like a week later I get arrested and someone's like, why did you sign that? I'm just going to be like, I'm just not going to sign it. Like if they really are not going to let me in, I'll just sit in the airport until like the people from the Weightlifting Federation wake up and talk to someone. Like that was my plan if like I really didn't get through. But end of the day, they didn't even look at the form.
Nope.
Like she didn't even look at the form.
She's just stepping.
She just saw the PDF, saw that it said negative, didn't look at the date, slammed a stamp on the form. I went to immigration. They didn't even look at the form. He literally pulled the form in and threw it to the side.
Yeah.
Like, didn't even read it.
Nope.
And so I think my worries were for nothing. On the plane, I was, like, playing out all these scenarios in my head of, like I was like, if they say this, what will I say? If they say that, what will I say? Like, I probably spent an hour on the plane thinking about, like, what sort of scenarios and how I would respond. And, like, literally, I get there, and they don't even think about it. They don't even look at it.
That was so funny.
And I was... Anyway, so that was... I overthought that. I didn't panic, but I was definitely, like, ready to present my case or whatever, but...
Yeah, so in order to travel to Uzbekistan or to travel to most countries, you have to have a negative PCR test within a certain time frame before you either initiate your travel or cross the border... Or start your first flight or the last flight.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
It's very confusing. So what Ned and I did, we both got a bunch of tests. So we, to make sure that we
I
have
got
one,
more tests, though.
Yeah. just to make sure we get a test in time for the 72 hours before we cross the border, I guess.
Well, the thing, it wasn't cross the border because the U.S., once again, now the U.S. Embassy website is evidently sometimes right, sometimes wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, after I got off the plane, I messaged the Weightlifting Federation just to say, like, hey, like, do you know that they're handing out forms on the plane that say you have to quarantine for 72 or for 14 days? And all they wrote back was, like, that information is just not correct.
Okay.
Like literally, like, they're like, what they're handing out on the plane is not correct.
You know what the German foreign ministry website says about Uzbekistan is rules or regulations can change very, very rapidly.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's only announced like on social media. That's what the German ministry website says about Uzbekistan.
Well, possibly. But anyway, so the Uzbek Weightlifting Federation basically said, like, that's not correct. And, like, you did the right thing to just not sign it and don't worry about it.
So we didn't break any laws. as far as we know.
I mean, I didn't break the law because it didn't say you have to sign it.
Right.
It just said if you sign it, you have to listen to this, and I didn't sign it. So,
all right.
You know, there you go. I didn't break a law.
Yep.
And also, you know, the other thing, too, is that we're being careful. Like, we're wearing masks everywhere we go. We're not, like, mingling in big crowds. We're doing our best to, like, stay out of any big crowds as much as possible.
That's true.
And like, we're, you know, we're not the ones that are going to be, like, driving a COVID outbreak here.
Yeah, we can go into detail later what we do to minimize that, maybe. But first, let's go back to, yeah, we got our test. Then you drive to the airport, to JFK.
Yeah. Well, hold on. I should explain, too, so a little bit about the timing. So my flight was on a Monday at 1 p.m. That was my flight time from JFK. So obviously, you know, I'm going to be checking in at, you know, 10 a.m., 11 a.m., somewhere in that time range at the airport. And the thing is that you have to have the test at the airport, right, to show them. So you can't get a test at, like, a CVS on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And have it be back Monday morning. It's just not going to be there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to go... There were a lot of details that happened with this. But basically, originally... I'll try to tell as fast as possible. But originally, I scheduled a test at a certain lab that could guarantee a turnaround time that was probably an hour from me. Because I couldn't find one that could guarantee a turnaround time, like, really close to me. Like, there was nothing, like, you know, 10 minutes away from me or whatever.
And why? Because the last thing you want is, like, you don't want to wait for a test and your flight is... You're missing a flight because your test is not ready.
Exactly.
So that's the issue.
So, you know, and this was a difficult thing to find. And I spend a lot of time, like, Googling, searching stuff. Like, I find some... Like, I'm not bad at searching on the internet, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But,
yeah,
like... I really struggled to find a place that, you know, could guarantee a turnaround time for a PCR test over a weekend. Because keep in mind, the U.S. Embassy in Uzbekistan website said you need a negative test within 72 hours of the initiation of travel. That's what the text says, and anyone could go verify that if they want. And so to me, initiation of travel means... 1 p.m. on Monday, when my flight takes off.
Yeah, checking in for your first flight. Oh no,
not even checking in.
Taking
off was really what I would say, because that's like a standard thing they could look at, like, you know, on your, you know, boarding pass or whatever. And so, you know, I basically scheduled a test for 1 p.m. on Friday,
mm-hmm.
because I was like, well, that's the rule, and I might as well get it as early as possible to give myself the best chance of getting this back in time. And so I found a place that basically guaranteed the turnaround. Oh, you know what? Sorry. I skipped one step. About a week before I was supposed to get the test, I got an email from the Weightlifting Federation of Uzbekistan, which, by the way, they're very, very helpful. But they sent me an email that said, oh, there's a new list out of approved labs that can handle the test.
Yeah. That was the next... wrench.
That was the next wrench. So the place I had originally scheduled, I had to cancel that test. Then I had to find another test about a week before I was supposed to take it. So, you know, my original test, my flight was April 12th. My original test was April 9th. And this is April 2nd. I'm getting this information. So I go on their list and I literally throw the list into a Google Doc, basically a Google sheet, because I was like, you know what? I'm seeing a lot of places on here double. You know, and so then I sorted it by alphabet, and then I realized that of the, like, they had like 140 labs on there, and then I was like, wait a second, I was like, about 60 of these are doubles. So I was like, first of all, there's not 140, there's more like 80.
Huh.
And then I realized a lot of them weren't labs. A lot of them were like, one was like Pat's Pharmacy, which was like a random, like, local pharmacy in, like, Indiana or something. Like, it was, or one was like McLean Pharmacy, which was like a random local pharmacy somewhere in Texas. I mean, anyone could go look this up, you know, if you go into the Uzbek, the U.S. Embassy website for Uzbekistan and you look on their COVID-19 page, you'll see they actually link to this list of labs that I'm talking about.
And this list exists also for Germany and for...
For every country. Someone in Uzbekistan, or maybe in their embassies around the world, or who knows what, someone just, like, Googled for labs, and they did a particularly poor job for
that was not good.
For the U.S. Like, it really was pretty bad. And here's the problem. The list of labs that they released was, like, a whole bunch of places that, first of all, a lot of them don't do this test. But they listed, like, kind of, like, big-name labs. Like, for instance, one of them was LabCorp, which is a huge, like, testing company in the U.S. There's LabCorp locations everywhere. There's a LabCorp location about 5 minutes from where, like, the Hooker at Palace is. So I was like, oh, great, LabCorp. So I call LabCorp. I'm like, hey, do you guys do PCR tests? They're like, no, we don't do PCR tests. They're like, we could do rapid tests.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, great, does me no good. So LabCorp does stuff like, for instance, if you want to, like, if you're getting, like, your blood drawn for, like, if your doctor, like, orders some blood work, like, you'll go to, like, a LabCorp, and they'll just, like, take the, you know, a couple blood vials, send it off, and that's how you get your blood tested. But they don't do PCR tests. The reason is that they don't do any active infection testing because they don't want to expose their, they don't want, like, people in there to be exposed to people who think they might have COVID because they don't have any, like, I guess, drive-through capabilities. So they just, they were like, oh, no, we don't do PCR tests. So literally the Uzbek list had all these places on it that didn't do it. I called three or four places that were like, no, we just don't do that. And then some of the places on the list were like CVS and Walgreens, which of course do PCR tests. But if I submit it, then like, or sorry, if I submit it at, you know, 1 p.m. on a Friday, it says, oh, you know, results can take, you know, 3 to 4 days or something like that. And I'm just like, 3 or 4 days? What do you want me to do? Just take this and hope?
Yeah. You can't
do that. You can't do that. So I'm going through their list and I literally sent it back to them. Like, color-coded and written out. And by the way, a ton of the places on the list were places that had one location. It was, like, San Diego, like, rapid PCR COVID testing. They had a location in San Diego. And, like I said, anyone could go through this. And, you know, maybe I'll link the Google Doc in, like, the show notes.
Maybe, yeah. I
can send you the Google Doc link. So, you know, I'm planning on making that in the show notes. So, eventually, after Googling every single one of these names, I eventually find one that's somewhat close to me. And by somewhat close, I mean about 45 minutes away. And said that it could do relatively rapid, like 1 to 2 day turnaround. So anyway, I end up getting that done. And I also found out in the meantime, I found out that at the Philadelphia airport, which is, you know, pretty close to me as well, they actually have very rapid turnarounds, where you can pay $250 and get the test turned around in under 4 hours.
Wow.
And they said typically it'll actually get turned around in about 30 minutes. They only say 4 hours just in case they're really busy, just to, like, pad the time. But, and that's because the lab is right on site that they do. But the thing is that the Philadelphia lab wasn't on the list. Okay.
So technically, if you go by the list, you could not use the fastest lab.
Yeah, I can't use the fastest lab. So I found, like I said, I did find one that was about 45 minutes away from me that was on the list that said they could turn around fast enough, et cetera, et cetera. So I booked an appointment at 1 p.m. there. I've literally had the sample collected at 1:05, and I know that because it's on the PDF.
Yeah.
So I had it collected, you know, just under the 72-hour mark from initiation of travel, or what I thought was initiation of travel. Then on the way back from that test, I decided to stop at the airport just to get a test. And also because at that point, I couldn't call that lab. They didn't have a phone number. And so I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stop because I just want to ask them, hey, I just have a question. You know, this 4-hour test, if I come, and by the way, it's open 7 days a week. I was like, if I come on Sunday afternoon, the day before my flight, is that 4-hour turnaround still valid? Or does it have to be like a weekday or this, or, you know, certain hours? And so I just wanted to ask them that. And so, and I also figured I would just get a second test while I was there just to make sure that one of them would come back. Because they do have a slower version of their test also that's cheaper. So I end up getting a second test. They do tell me that they can do the 4-hour turnaround basically any day of the week, any time, et cetera. So my plan was, okay, I got two tests at like 1-something p.m. on a Friday. If they're not back on Sunday afternoon, I'm going to drive back to the Philly airport, and I'll pay the $250 for the four-hour test, and then I'll be good. Luckily, both of them did come back by Sunday, so I felt like I was good, so I printed them both out. Monday morning, I drive to JFK, I get to the counter, the woman looks at them, and she's like, these tests aren't valid. And I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, she's like, I'm looking at the documentation from, for like, you know, flying to Tashkent, and it says that it needs to be within 72 hours of the flight to Tashkent.
Which, in that case, is the second leg from Istanbul.
Well, it was for you, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, for everyone, and pretty much it's the second leg, except for the people coming from Turkey. Yeah. And so it was like, you can't, like, this isn't valid because you'll be over seven. Of course, you know, of course I'll be over 72 hours because I was purposefully taking it as early as possible to make sure I would get them back. So she was basically just like, you can't get on the plane. You can't check in. And I was like, what? You know, I was like, what do I do? Because, like, I even showed her the website and basically just said, like, listen, this website, which is not some random, you know,
WordPress.
It's not some, like, WordPress blog of someone who's, like, an Uzbek, you know, travel blogger. Like, this is like the U.S. Embassy in Uzbekistan, which I realize is not the Uzbek government, but you'd think it was people who were somewhat on top of what these rules were. And that one does say initiation of travel. And I was like, I thought initiation of travel meant when I initiate travel. Most people would not say you're initiating travel after you do a 10-hour.
Everybody who reads that would read it the way we did.
Yeah. At 1 p.m. on Monday.
100%.
So, but, you know, luckily she was just like, oh, well, you know, if you just walk like 1 minute that way in the terminal, it was literally... not literally 1 minute. It wasn't a far walk at all. Probably about 50 steps. She was like, they can do 1 hour turnaround PCR tests.
Which is fucking amazing.
And so I was like, wow, 1 hour turnaround. And she's like, yeah, but it's $220. Do you want to go do it? And I'm like, well, if I can't get on the plane without it, then I think I'm going to spend the $220. So I was just like, okay. So I went and walked over there, and I basically, it was pretty much empty, and there were a bunch of, you know, people sitting at the desk, and like I registered all my information on like a little iPad thing that they have. And then I was like, I have a question, like, just to verify, this is like 1 hour turnaround. She's like, oh no, it's 30 minutes right now. So I was like, 30 minutes. Wow. This is pretty solid.
Yeah.
So then,
is that when you messaged me?
I think I messaged you after I had taken it and sat back down.
Oh, okay.
Because at that time, I was just, like, trying to get it done, you know. So I went and got that test done, which was very painless and easy. And I literally saw the person walk out of the tent and walk into the next tent where the guy had, like, the little lab going to run the test. So I literally, like, saw them, like, you know, like, kind of, like, unpacking my vial or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I just sat down, and then that was when I messaged like my fiance and Gregor, and I don't know if anyone else, but I messaged
the most important people,
the most important two people in my life.
Yes.
I messaged my parents too, I think.
Okay.
Well, maybe not. Hopefully they're not listening and they're not contradicting what I'm saying. But anyway, so I got the test result back. Obviously it was negative, and it did come back in 30 minutes. So it was painless. And, you know, from the moment that she said, oh, there's rapid COVID testing right there, I was no longer panicked. But for about 30 seconds, I was, like, in a panic where I was like,
"Yeah,
this is going to completely screw this whole thing up."
So for me, I also took two tests beforehand just to make sure I get one back in time. I was told we had, like, a 95% chance of a 24-hour turnaround for our tests. So I took one on, what was it, Saturday and one on Sunday. And if I had not done that second test, I also would have got stuck. And for me, the problem would have been I wouldn't have gotten a 30-minute test in time for my flight on Monday or on Tuesday, whatever it was.
So it's good that you did your second test.
Yeah. It's better to test, to double up and be sure you have one in time.
Yeah.
Anyway, we made it to...
It was a bit of a hassle, but we made it to Tashkent.
Yeah, first we made it to Istanbul Airport, which was a total shit show. I mean, the airport itself,
yeah,
just crowded. tons of people.
First of all, it wasn't crowded compared to normal Istanbul airport, but compared to the amount of crowds that I've been in the last, you know, 13 months or so,
yeah,
it was a lot more people and a lot less, like, precautions being taken by people there.
Yeah.
And, like, I've actually gone to, like, a few, very, very few, but I've gone to a few public events. The main one I can think of is I did go to a Sixers game. Not that long ago, maybe a month ago.
But compared to Istanbul,
completely different.
Like the
Sixers game, everything was very spread apart. There were only 3,000 people in there out of 20,000 capacity, and you know everyone had to wear masks, and there were people staring at you the whole time. If you took off your mask, they would like yell at you. You know, like it was. I felt very safe at the Sixers game. Like, yeah. I didn't at all feel like, oh, well, I just, you know, got COVID. If I had to, like, sit in the Istanbul airport for, like, 8 hours, I'd be like, I'm pretty sure I just got it.
I sat there for 20 minutes and I was worried.
Yeah, you were worried. Yeah. Anyway, I got a hotel room because they have a hotel in the terminal. You don't even have to, like, leave security. You don't even have to leave the international area.
Which would be a pain. You probably couldn't do it because Turkey has also strict immigration rules.
Yeah, you can't. Well, you can't because, first of all, you need a Turkish visa.
Oh, well, yeah.
And then second of all, you would have to deal with, like, quarantining rules and blah, 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 and this. And, like, you pretty much, in the age of, like, COVID, you pretty much can't leave.
No.
No, I have technically left the airport in Turkey before. This was the old airport. You know, now we're flying through, like, the new Istanbul airport. The old one, like, Atatürk airport. I left it a few times in the past to just, like, sleep at an airport hotel when I had longer layovers.
But anyway, you got the hotel room there.
Yeah, I got the hotel room here.
And that's because you arrived, like, a couple of hours earlier.
A bunch of hours earlier. I had a 13-hour layover.
Yeah, that's right. So I arrived, and then Ned picked me up from one of these bistros, and we went to the hotel room. And, oh, thank God. So quiet. Like, you have a shower.
Yeah, it's just nicer to hang out in the hotel room.
And Team Taiwan.
Kind of expensive, but...
Yeah, kind of expensive. But Team Taiwan
also
chose the same hotel. Yeah. So if you follow Guo or other Taiwanese athletes on Instagram, you saw they made a stop at that same airport hotel.
Yotel. Yeah. I've stayed at Yotels before in other airports. Like Heathrow had one. I remember staying in one in Heathrow.
Mm.
And I'm trying to remember. I think I've seen it at other ones, but anyway. Yeah, the Yotel came in clutch because normally when I'm in Istanbul, I would sit in the lounge, but the lounge, frankly, was really pretty bad and, like, scaled down. Because, like, one thing I like to do when I travel is I like to shower after I get off long planes because it just makes me feel way better. It almost makes me feel like I didn't travel.
Huh.
And they had shut down the showers for COVID reasons.
Yeah.
Which I had a feeling they would, but I actually thought the food would be a little bit better. But they did have food, but it wasn't that great, and they had shut down the showers, and it just wasn't, you know, I was like, I just don't feel like.
And it also like had a bunch of other tourists not wearing masks.
Yeah, it had a bunch of, you know, tourists not wearing masks, and I was just like, I'm gonna go see if there's another option. So I asked at the front desk of the lounge, and they said, oh, there's a hotel, you can go see if they have, you know, space, how much it is, whatever. So I just walked over to the hotel and got a room. It was a little bit expensive for what it was, but it was well worth it given, you know, just like ability to reduce my COVID exposure for that length of time, plus just getting in. I actually took two showers. I took one just as I got there. I took another one just before I left, before we got onto the flight to Tashkent.
Yeah.
And I took a nap in between, so that was part of the reason I wanted to shower. But anyway, it was clutch. It's definitely worth it. You know, people, I always feel like people like underinvest in their comfort when traveling.
Especially athletes too, traveling to these competitions.
Yeah, it's like, I'll see athletes who are like,
yeah.
And I'm not talking, you know, I understand some people don't have, literally just don't have the money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, if you're traveling on a shoestring budget and you literally just don't have the money to spend like $100 on a hotel room, I understand. You know what I mean? Like I've, you know, at this point in my life, I have the money to do that. But I was a poor college student at one time where I just didn't have the money to do things. And I just had to just say no to things because I just physically just didn't have the money. Not that I didn't want to spend it. I just didn't have it. But I know some athletes that are relatively, like, well off, relatively, you know, they have a good amount of money. You know, like, they drive nice cars, they own their own house, some of them own their own gym, some, you know, like, this and that. And, like, they will just, like, decline to spend, they'll sit there for, like, an 18-hour layover.
Yeah.
And not just get a $100 hotel room. And I'm like, on their way to a competition that they've been training for, like, 6 months or more.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what is wrong with you? Yeah. Why are you not investing at all in your body. Comfort? Yeah, like, you're hurting your body. And, like, people are just sometimes not good at kind of just, like, spending money on things like that. Which is weird because they'll spend money on so many other things that, like, help them. Like, you know, they'll spend money on, like, you know, cryotherapy, which, you know, has very questionable benefits. So, like, there's all sorts of things like that. But, yeah, no, I'm big on, like, you know, keeping yourself as reasonably comfortable when you travel as possible. And something like that is 100% well worth it.
Mm.
But anyway, so we got to Tashkent.
Yeah.
We haven't even talked about weightlifting yet. This is basically a travel podcast at this point.
It's ATG.
Well, we're 36 minutes in. This is travel. We got to put this in, like, the show notes. Like, skip to 37 minutes if you want anything about weightlifting.
Well, well, we're not starting weightlifting just now.
Okay.
Stick with us.
Wait, what are we going with?
So we arrived, let's do it chronologically. We arrived at the airport. I got in, took some time because, yeah, immigration was slow. What happened then?
Yeah, I got through immigration a bit faster because I was, like, literally the third person off the plane. And Gregor was
literally the last person.
Literally the last person.
Yep.
Out of, you know, a fairly big plane, so that...
So I always do that when I'm on these big planes, and I'm always sitting very far in the back, because the chances of getting, like, an empty seat next to you are
much higher.
Much higher in the back.
You can't sit in the front of coach and get an empty seat.
No, that's impossible. Not possible.
Yeah.
And on my way here, on my first leg, I had a whole empty row, and on my second leg, the whole plane was crowded up to, like, the last 10 rows, maybe, or 8. Yeah, 7-8 rows. Yeah. And then there were some empty seats, and I was lucky, got an empty seat, which was nice.
So, yeah, we got through immigration. We got picked up by someone. We decided to really splurge on this, by the way. So cab rates in Uzbekistan are extremely low compared to anywhere else I've been in the world.
Yeah.
And it's somewhere in the range of between $2 and $3 is, like, the normal price to get roughly a 20-minute taxi ride. But we had the option of having someone from our hotel pick us up for $25. So roughly 10 times the going rate. And we knew this, that it was 10 times. We've been to Uzbekistan before, so we know how the cab rates work here. $25. But we were just like, you know what? Let's just book it. Because it's about $12 each. Yeah. And, you know, we're getting in. Keep in mind, our plane was scheduled to land at 1 in the morning. We ended up landing at about 1:20 in the morning. By the time we get through all of, like, you know, immigration, customs, everything, it was after 2 in the morning. And, you know, the last thing you want to be doing is negotiating with, like, an Uzbek taxi driver who might or might not wear a mask.
Who probably does not wear a mask.
Probably does not wear a mask. And, you know, just trying to, like, explain to them where to go and blah, blah, blah. It's just like, no, let's just pay the... Let's overpay by 10 times and get this $25, you know,
really,
like,
car
from the hotel. And the other problem, too, is that a lot of, you know, cars in Uzbekistan are relatively small. And, you know, I have two big bags. Gregor has a big bag. We both have big camera bags, etc. It's like, sometimes with two people in all these bags, you kind of struggle. And frankly, we pretty much maxed out the space in this sedan.
Yeah.
And this wasn't a tiny car.
No, this wasn't.
It was just a normal...
It was bigger than my car, for sure.
It's a bigger sedan, I guess, is what he had. So anyway, we got into the hotel, and yeah.
Yeah. And we picked the hotel in walking distance from the venue on purpose, just to avoid more exposure in cabs and stuff.
And, yeah, and just to be clear, they don't really have cabs here. They do technically have them, but the way the system works here is essentially it's everyone is an Uber, and you don't really call anything on an Uber app. You just kind of hitchhike everywhere you go.
So what you do is you, when you're on the side of the road, there's constantly cars are passing you, and you just
pretend like everyone is a taxi.
Yeah, and then people honk at you, and you turn around, and then you raise your arm, and they stop. they pick you up and you give them some money. And then
you pay like a dollar. And typically they'll only go if they're kind of going that direction anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're just saying, hey, I just want to go down the street, usually they'll be fine. But if you say, hey, I want to go the opposite direction, they'll just tell you no.
Yeah. Which is a pretty cool system. Very communal.
Yeah.
Trust-based.
So we did that the last time we were in Uzbekistan. We did that every day, twice a day.
Twice a day,
yeah. And sometimes more than once if we went somewhere other than the venue.
Yeah.
So we were doing that all the time. So we had the system down, but we just really didn't want to do that. And I did actually confirm with the Uzbek Federation. I was like, is this system still working in COVID?
Mm-hmm.
Or is like no one wanting to pick up? And they said, oh, no. People just pick up. It's just normal. Nothing's different. And I was like, okay, so Uzbekistan might or might not be taking this that seriously. Or I was like, it's tough to tell because Uzbekistan doesn't have a lot of cases.
Yeah.
If you look at it, their case numbers are low. So the question is, do they actually have a low case count or do they have a lack of testing?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, I would guess it's probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
Like, they probably, like, you know, I don't think any country has a low case count exclusively due to low testing.
Mm.
You know, it's because it's tough to hide something like COVID in strictly through testing. You know what I mean? You can kind of, like, fudge the numbers and, you know, people look at a country like Russia and they're like, oh, well, you know, officially they have a bad outbreak. But unofficially, they have a really bad outbreak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's something like that, where it's like, oh, you know, they definitely have way more than what their numbers say, blah, blah, blah. You know, and like, obviously, that's the case with a lot of places. But with Uzbekistan, it's a little tough to say exactly what the COVID situation really is like here. But people just don't take it that seriously. So I just didn't really think it was a smart idea for us to chance it in a taxi there and back every day. Especially when we know this hotel is a nice hotel, and it's about a 15-minute walk to the venue, so it's kind of like, you know, it's not too bad. It's a fairly nice walk. The only thing that'll be unpleasant, it looks like some days will be rain, but
yeah,
we'll
manage it.
All right, so are we going to talk about weightlifting, or is there anything to...
Let's go back in time and talk about Europeans first, maybe.
Okay, all right.
Excursion to Moscow.
Yeah, why don't you talk about... What do you want to say about Europeans?
Well, we were not there.
We were not there.
How about that? We tried to be there, as usual.
It ended my streak. I the last Europeans I had missed before this was 2012.
Wow.
So I'd been to every Europeans in between, which was a good streak. I enjoyed it, but messed up my streak, so I could not go to Europeans.
Yeah, and yeah, should we talk about reason too?
Yeah, we could talk about the reason. It was essentially the Russian government was not allowing visas for anyone who wasn't a part of a team delegation.
Mm-hmm.
Or the technical term that they used was people who were there for sport relations.
Mm-hmm.
That was like the other category they were allowing. So basically, if you didn't get yourself on a European team...
Yeah.
In the sense, like, Gregor getting himself listed as, like, a German official or a coach or something.
Yeah.
Or if you didn't get listed as sport relations. And the only people who could get categorized as sport relations were, like, you know, like, IWF, you know, general secretary or, mm-hmm. you know, president of, like, you know, this federation or blah, blah, blah. Those were the people who could get listed as sport relations who weren't there as parts of teams.
Mm.
Other than that, they weren't giving visas to anyone.
Yeah.
And the thing was I also looked into just applying for a Russia visa, but they just won't give them out during COVID.
Right.
Like, I can't apply for a Russia visa separate from this. Like, I needed the invitation letter from the organizing committee.
Same. Because usually, like, we just get our own visas and just go.
Yeah, usually we just have a visa or we have... Like, at one point, I had a 3-year Russian business visa, so mm-hmm. I didn't have to apply for a while. But that had expired for this. And actually, you know, I haven't been to Russia since 2016.
Same.
Oh, wait, sorry, 2017. No, sorry, 2016. End of 2016 for Kolkov Power Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that was when it was. Okay.
Yeah.
So I haven't been to Russia for, you know, roughly 4.5 years.
Yeah.
So it's been a little while. But anyway, so the organizing committee just wouldn't give out these visas, and like, I don't think it was, to be fair, I don't think it was 100% their decision. Like, I think that they had been told by someone in, like, the Russian foreign ministry or something like that, like, okay, this is what we'll do. And they were kind of, like, implementing that rule.
Uh-huh.
But they wouldn't, you know, make an exception. And so we just couldn't go.
Yeah, and then we tried to get local guys in.
Yeah, that was one thing that did bother me, that I did feel like they weren't being helpful on. At one point I asked, hey, can I send a local Russian who obviously doesn't need a visa? They're in Moscow.
Yep.
And they'll wear a mask. I'll make sure they get like a PCR test before they, you know, go or whatever. And I was told no media, three Russian photographers have been accredited, and that's it.
Which is not true.
Which is not true.
Yeah.
That's not what ended up happening.
Not at all.
There was like, you know, all these Russians were like wandering around the training hall doing whatever they want, sending us, like essentially tagging us in videos on Instagram. And I was just like, and then, you know, you saw scenes from the training hall where there were literally like 100-something people in there. Most people not wearing masks, people hugging. You saw all sorts of pictures of like
officials
and teams and this and that not wearing masks, hugging.
Yeah.
You know, you saw like, I saw a video, the EWF live streamed the Congress. And there were just tons of officials not wearing masks there.
No.
So, what really bothered me about it was that, first of all, I understand. Okay, you know, we're not special. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, anyone who is listening to this is like, oh, they think they're special. They think they should get special treatment. Like, no. I'm not special. If this had truly been about COVID, like, if they were truly strict there. And by the way, talk to anyone who was there.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Talk to anyone who was there.
The stories we've heard.
From a Western country. Like, talk to, like, Yasmin, or talk to anyone from, like, you know, Finland or Norway or, you know, Great Britain or a whole bunch of other places. Like, people from these countries were sending both of us videos from the training hall being like, oh my God.
Like, this is actually happening.
So here's the thing. Once again, I want to reiterate, we are not special that should get some sort of exemptions to anything.
Mm.
However, if they're being strict about COVID, then in my mind, they need to actually be strict about COVID.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If they're not being strict about COVID, then they should have let us in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In my mind, they could go one of two ways. If they had truly run a very strict competition where, like, social distancing and masks and, like, very strict training hall and, like, all the officials were wearing masks and all these protocols were in place and blah, 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 then I would have been like, well, you know what? I understand why they didn't want to let us in, because they were trying to run as strict of a competition as possible.
Yeah.
And if they let in a couple media, then they've got to let in other media. And if they let in these media, then it kind of snowballs into letting in more people. And they just don't want the risk of adding 50 people to this competition that they're trying to run as strict as possible.
Yeah.
If that had truly happened, I would have been like, you know what? It happened. Whatever. Okay. But like then when we saw the actual competition and like how little...
And how much media there was.
Like, and also how much media there was. And the fact that, you know, Jen from One Kilo, which, you know, I commend her for doing a good job with this, but she hired a local, and the organizing committee gave him accreditation, even though I was told if I hired a local, that person couldn't get accreditation.
Like, my guy in Moscow didn't get one.
And you had a guy in Moscow who couldn't get accreditation.
So
it was kind of like... No, first of all, I never complained about this because... And I talked to Jen from One Kilo about this. And I asked her before I said anything to the organizing committee because I wanted to make sure... I'm not trying... I would never be one of these people who, like, tries to, like, interrupt someone else's coverage to get ours. So I talked to her before I said anything to the organizing committee. And after I talked to her, she said, you know, if possible, just don't say anything because, like, I don't want my guy to get scrutinized. And I didn't say anything. Like, I never complained to the organizing committee about it.
Yeah.
Before the competition started, I complained a little bit. But that was also before I knew that Jen had even hired someone.
Right.
So I did complain a bit at that point, saying, like, hey, like, this is kind of ridiculous that, like, we can't even send in a local who will stay. Like, I was like, this person won't go in the training hall. They'll stay up in the balcony. They'll wear a mask. And they'll have a negative PCR test. Like, really? They can't go? Like, how ridiculous is this? And, you know, I essentially got nowhere with it, which I'll admit, kind of pissed me off about it, but it is what it is. And so, kind of at the last minute, I did a Hail Mary, where I have a guy in Spain who has a few of my cameras. Mm-hmm. He has more than one, and one of the ones he has is a relatively small and portable and relatively easy to operate one. And he doesn't really use it that much. He actually doesn't really have a use for it at all. So I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm going to see if I can send it with the Spanish team. So essentially, I messaged my guy in Spain who has, you know, my cameras. And said, hey, can you get this, you know, kind of like smaller camera plus lens plus, you know, a couple batteries, chargers, etc. Can you get this to this guy who... Can you basically get it to the Spanish team to take to Moscow? Hmm. So then the Spanish team essentially, you know, took this camera to Moscow. Then from that point, I like assembled a very, I would say, ragtag group of athletes who, not, and by ragtag, I mean like not camera experts by any means. You know, good athletes, not good camera people necessarily. Some of them were, some of them not really. And so, you know, it ended up being like this week of camera chaos where, you know, it was like one person was running at one session, the next person was running at the next session.
Yeah, keep in mind, Nat has to manage all of it, who has the camera when, and has to provide the exchange point.
I have to be like, oh, you know, like so-and-so is like leaving the hotel at this point, they'll be at the training hall from this hour, and the other person's like, well, I'm not getting to the training hall until that. And then I'd be like, okay, could you give the camera to this official? They'll hold the camera for, like, this period of time. And then this next person who's getting to the training hall will pick it up from that official. So this camera was in, like, you know, dozens of people's hands over the course of the week.
So it's a great super-spreading device.
Yeah, it's a super... It probably has COVID, realistically. But anyway, so this camera just was spread around. And what was very frustrating about it was that I would have to train people on it every day. Now, I actually made a training video that I sent to people. I made it as short as possible. It was like something like a 13 or 14 minute video. And, you know, I would love to have it be even shorter, but just to like kind of run through a couple scenarios and try to teach someone how to use it. It's about as short as I can make it and have the stuff be reasonably good.
Yeah.
So, you know, I made this video. I sent it to people. Some of them watched it. Some of them didn't. The ones who didn't watch it tended to produce predictably bad results. And some of them did a great job. And I've really got to give a shout out. You know, and I've said some, I don't know if mean things about Finland is the way to put it. But
Finland has suffered.
I've made some jokes about Finland in like C sessions and stuff like that before. And I feel bad about it because honestly, Finland came through clutch.
And saved your ass.
They did save my ass for this 2021 Europeans. And I owe them big time. Especially
Sarah and Eero. Yeah.
Mainly Sarah. Eero didn't do too much. But Eero was nice enough to let Sarah shoot the 81s, which was nice. Yeah. Nice of him. But, yeah, Sarah was really the key. If I could say her last name, I would say it. Raitulainen or something?
Raitulainen. Yeah,
anyway, I can't say her last name. I can barely even say her. I'm saying her first name wrong because it has like a different...
Two A's.
Yeah, it has like Sarah. Two A's in it. Sarah. So anyway, she came through clutch. I gotta say, she is really good. Like, I would... If she wasn't busy, you know, doing weightlifting, I would just hire her to just go take videos.
From what you told me, she asked the right questions. She really thought about how to shoot it, like... Is this framed correctly? If this happens, would you want me to do that instead?
Yeah. She was really good, and she did a good job, like, sending files back without even me asking her to send files back. Like, just...
Yeah, all the videos you see on HookGrip right now...
Are from Sarah. No one else has managed to upload anything.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna run out pretty soon of the videos that Sarah sent. And that's why I don't have some of like the later videos yet. I don't have like any of the heavier groups videos yet.
Yeah.
But the good news is that we did manage to, even though, you know, we were getting kind of blocked by the organizing committee, we did manage to get some videos out of Moscow. Not very good, you know, compared to what I would have gotten if I was there, it was pretty bad. But compared to no videos, it was definitely pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say Jen probably got the best overall coverage of the major, you know, weightlifting media organizations.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
It is what it is.
I did okay. I did what I could. It was very frustrating, though.
Yeah.
Especially when we all knew that, especially with the videos that Lasha posted before Euros, we all knew what was going to happen. Yeah. Like, Lasha was not going there to do, like, 215, 252 or something.
Nah.
You know? And I like how 215 is, like, a joke now.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is a huge number.
It's a huge number, but, like, none of us would have been that upset about missing it. I would have been like, 215, whatever.
Yeah, but, so our hope is that Lasha, of course, knowing Lasha, he will do 1 kilo more at the next competition.
Well, his next competition is Tokyo, which obviously we're not going to, so that'll be a that'll be a good one. But I'm hoping that, in theory, it sounds like Worlds will be in Batumi this fall.
Yeah.
And so even though it's a little bit unusual for someone to keep competing after the Olympics like that, I would guess that Lasha would, just because of what he did in 2016, going to, like, Euro Under-23s 6 months later.
After becoming Olympic champion.
Yeah, he's lifting at Euro Under-23s.
At a stage that is on ground level.
Yeah, with no lights.
With no lights. Yeah.
And by the way, there, I actually had another Nordic lifter shooting for me. That was Emma. Do you remember Emma?
Oh, yeah.
Emma. So Emma from Norway was shooting for me in...
Wow.
I love that meet. Well, the first couple days was Emma, then an Israeli guy took over. But anyway, yeah, that was good. But, you know, overall, I would say the Nordic group and a few other people, but mostly Nordic, most of them did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
You know, now Sarah was a standout. Wow. Sarah was, like, exceptional, like, someone I would just straight up just, like, pay to go do this.
Mm-hmm.
There were other people who I would say did a good job, but kind of, like, fell short in some aspect. Like, they kind of, like, fell short in communication. And by that I mean, like, I didn't find out until after the session that they had shot that session. And they never checked in with me to make sure that, like, and their settings were right, or their framing was right, or they were focusing it right. And the thing is that there were several people who... I found out mid-session, hey, they're the one shooting this session, and I would write to them and be like, hey, could you send me a picture of the screen? And it was terrible.
Oh, wow.
And then I would be like, how are you focusing it? And they're like, wait, you have to focus it? And I'm like, wait. I'm like, did you watch the like any of the tutorial video I sent you like a week ago? And they're like, no, I didn't watch it. And I'm like, oh, God.
I was
like,
yell at them because...
Well, I can't yell at them because, first of all...
It's very nice for them to do that.
It's nice for them to put in any effort whatsoever.
Yeah, they don't have to do that.
Even though they are putting in the minimum effort. You know what I mean? Like, they're not putting in the maximum effort by any means. So they're putting in the minimum. But I still can't yell at them because, I mean, first of all, I'm not paying them.
Yeah.
Second of all, they're not there to shoot videos for me. You know, now if this is someone that I paid for their flight, I paid for their hotel, they know what they're doing, and they're taking shitty videos, then I'm yelling at them.
Yeah.
But someone who I didn't pay for their hotel, I didn't pay for their flight, I'm not paying for their food, I'm not paying for it, then I can't yell at them. I can just be like, all right, like, please do it this way, you know, whatever. But I can't get that upset about it. And I do appreciate that they were trying. They just don't know that they were probably shooting unusable videos. But, you know, I'll see. You know, I haven't seen most of what was shot.
Yeah.
So it's a little tough for me to really evaluate their performance. It might actually be a lot better than I'm thinking, and it might be a lot worse than... It might be to the point that I could never use this video whatsoever.
Maybe, but we know so far there's a couple of sessions that we know you have great footage.
Well, the ones that Sarah did.
Sarah. Christy.
And Christy did a good job.
Yeah.
Christy was a notch below Sarah. So, by the way, when I say Christy, we should mention that this is... Now, she has, like, a different last name because of how, like, Russian last names work and this and that. But, like, Christy Zaloyev is, I guess, what I would call her.
Mm-hmm.
But, so her dad is... What's his first name again?
Kazbek.
Kazbek. Okay, I knew it. I just couldn't remember. Yeah. So, Kazbek Zaloyev is...
First of all, he's a... 9-time or 11-time arm wrestling world champion.
He's a crazy strong dude.
Like, he's wrecked people's arms.
he's probably, like, broken arms.
He's broken arms.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with this guy. He's a strong dude. You know, he's older now, but I'm sure he's still just, like, insanely, like, got... Like,
those people don't get weak.
He's got some old man strength. Yeah, he's got that old man strength. But he's... I coached a lot of lifters, but the two most famous that I know of are, Turieva and Albegov.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, he's a coach in Vladikavkaz. We actually went to his gym. Mm-hmm. Even though I think he has a new gym now.
Yeah, they renovated
it. Yeah, he's like, you know, has like a, basically a nice gym now. Not that it wasn't nice when we were there, but it was older, whereas now he has a, a newly renovated one. And
anyway, Christy
is his daughter.
That's right.
And we knew Christy from when we went to Vladikavkaz in 2016 for the Russian Championship. And, you know, just, you know, she took us around there with some other people and, you know, we got a little, like, tour of the area and we, like, just, like, stayed in touch on Instagram and we've seen her at a few other meets where she, like, kind of comes. And here's the other thing about Christy. She's not just, like, oh, a weightlifting coach's daughter who is like, hey, what is this? I'm just here for the trip. She is an expert.
She's in weightlifting encyclopedia.
She really is. Like, she knows more than, like, she knows way more than, for instance, you know, people who think that they're super fans in the U.S. or something like that who I talk to at meets. Mm-hmm. She knows way more about weightlifting. Like, she could tell you, like, oh, you know, this person, like, you know, won, like, the, you know, like, the 61 kilo or, you know, they're the 60 kilo class in, like, you know, the 1988 Olympic. Oh, obviously, that was Süleymanoğlu, but you know what I mean? Like, she knows random facts of things and just knows a ton about weightlifting, knows, like, all the athletes, knows just, like, so much stuff about, like, everything that's going on.
And keep in mind, she's not working in weightlifting.
No, she works in nuclear stuff.
Yeah. She's just smart.
Yeah, she's smart.
Yeah.
So, at one point, Christy, middle of the week, sends me a video from the stands. And I'm like, Christy, that's just a terrible phone video. Because it was. It was, like, super zoomed out, like, super overexposed. Like, you know, it was, like, shaky. It was, like, shooting, like, kind of sideways. And Christy, that's a terrible phone video. Like, I can't use that. Like, that's just... you know, Bobo. Hmm. And so she was like, oh, you know, give me another chance. I'll take a better video. And I was like, I have another idea. How about you go find this Finnish girl who's sitting over on the side? And I sent her basically a picture of what the screen looked like from where, you know, Sarah was sitting. Because Sarah had to leave. She had to basically go home that day. And I was like, can you shoot the 73A session?
Nice.
And then I messaged Sarah and I was like, hey, you got to teach this Russian girl how to use the camera in about 3 minutes. Because Christy hadn't seen the tutorial video. Because I didn't know Christy was going to come on board. So then Christy, in about 3 minutes of tutorial from someone who was not an expert and didn't know how to use the camera a few days before.
Yeah.
Christy managed to do a good job and shot the 73 session. And, you know, a few of those videos are online. Like the Max Lang video is online. The Smilov video is online. I think that might be all I put up from the 73As that she shot, but there's other videos I have that are usable. Like I have a good Brick and Shalia 184 video and stuff like that she shot. And so she did a pretty good job, and she actually helped to shoot some other sessions as well. Christy was very helpful. The one thing that I do regret is that Christy was not able to help out the last day. And once again, this is not Christy's fault, because Christy had guests coming in, and she had to, like, basically, you know, attend to those guests for the Lasha session.
Okay.
And so Christy couldn't help. So Christy was nowhere near the camera, and I had someone, you know, by this point, Sarah had left. Mm. And so this was one of the struggles of having a remote camera of an unpaid ragtag group of non-camera people.
I can't believe this worked.
Yeah. So I was essentially, you know, dealing with someone who hadn't shot any days before on the last day. And unfortunately, the Lasha 222 video is not usable.
Yeah.
So that's too bad. But I did get other good videos from that session. No, I haven't actually received them yet, but in theory, they exist on a memory card in Norway somewhere right now. Hopefully I will get those sooner or later once, you know, the Norwegians get out of quarantine. But the it was an all week struggle.
Yeah.
But it was worth it. You know, I got something out of it, and
definitely
better than nothing.
100%. Okay, so that was Europeans for us. For you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I like how it was more like, this is what it was like for me, not actually what happened in the meet. We didn't talk about, like, you know, like Sturi or, you know, Lasha or this.
Sturi, yeah. I'm thinking what we could talk about next. I mean, it does make sense to talk about the results now. It's not...
Yeah, the results already happened. Yeah, you know, people
it already
know.
Happened. People yeah. know. So today we filmed some training hall here in Tashkent. And it was our first time filming since, in over a year. Felt a little weird, especially because the training hall layout is a lot different than what you saw, for example, at Europeans, where it's just a big hall with like many platforms next to each other. Because here what they did is, first of all, it's a smaller venue, and then they separated it in three areas, which is the training area, which is as big as the warm-up area, and then in the middle you have the competition area. But yeah, the training area is also split up into boxes. Around each platform, there is, what do you call them? Like, there are walls around it.
Just a partition.
A partition, yeah. That was the word I was looking for. So it makes it very difficult to film things and see what's happening. So when training or shooting was difficult before, now it's even more difficult because you just don't know what's happening around you because you cannot see it. But it was nice to see the Korean team again.
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was not too exciting of an actual training hall day, but it was good to just get like the layout of what's it like. And we were also able to like discuss with the local organizing committee exactly where we would sit and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is really helpful. Really helpful to know someone. And the people here are very friendly towards us and actually make an effort to help us get better footage, which is really cool. They go out of their way to do that. So yeah, maybe we should cut it off right here and continue this at a later stage. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing is that I believe I'm actually messaging right now trying to figure out if the start book is out. It should be
in the making now. Maybe it's out.
It should be done because I was just talking to someone who. Yeah, let's see. I don't know exactly where it would be. Is the problem? You know what I mean?
Because on the Asian Federation website, it's definitely not.
The Asian Federation website has never been updated. That still says results from like Qatar in 2005.
Yeah, it's also not on IWF. Yeah, I think we have to wait till somebody sends it to us.
Yeah.
Some PDF.
I'm actually asking for it right now, but we won't really have time to look through it on this podcast. Anyway, so in theory, the start book should be out any minute. They're done preparing it, is what I was just told, so in theory it's somewhere.
And the way it works is people...
I just got told that Zoli's still doing it.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Yeah, usually sometimes it takes like till 1, 2 a.m.
You know what's crazy? At Euros, they didn't release the start book until like 8 hours before the competition was starting.
Yeah, and people were wondering, am I complaining today or tomorrow or the day after? It was crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, yeah, so there's not really that much more to talk about then, just because we don't know the exact start book. And, you know, when there's no entry list, like with Euros, you know, they put up that entry list. So it's a little bit easier to kind of analyze the competition, who's going to be there. Like right now, I really don't have a good idea of who's here. And by the way, I did find out there's a lot of speculation about Rostami's weight class.
Yeah, I heard 81.
He's 89. So he's 89. He confirmed 89. I talked to the doctor from Iran today. Mm-hmm. He is 89. I don't know what his plan is because, like, you know, he's, you know, with the rules as they stand, he's not eligible for, you know, Tokyo.
And everybody's still waiting for IWF to say something about.
Well, I guess maybe he's eligible, but
he's just very low.
He won't be able. He doesn't have a score from one of the periods. I guess the way I should say it. He's eligible.
That's right.
But he. You know, he isn't going to go to Tokyo if the standings or if the rules stay the same. So
yeah.
I'm not sure if he's competing at 89 just to kind of, you know, win Asians. which you would think like Rustami just wouldn't care about winning Asians at this point. Or if he has some hope of somehow getting into Tokyo as a... I don't even know, because, you know, you would think, obviously, Moradi is the... Moradi's obviously the 96. Like, at this point, Rustami's going down to 89. He's not coming back up to 96 to, like, unseat Moradi.
Yeah.
And I was told that Moradi is in not world record shape, but he's in good shape.
He's getting better.
And then... So, what I'm wondering is, like, do you think that maybe Rustami is, like, on his way down to 81? But then you would think... You have to have two competitions at 81 so in the period. So he's going to have zero. So he won't be eligible for 81 anyway.
Yeah.
So in my mind, it sounds to me like he's almost ruled himself out, even though he's ineligible in other ways.
Uh-huh.
Or not ineligible, but not going to go in other ways. It sounds like he's almost like ruled himself out for Tokyo, but he's still competing, which to me is interesting because... He had always told me, like, all he cares about is Olympic Games, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll see, but...
We can try to ask him, if we see him.
Yeah. Just, like, hey, Stalin, what do you think? what's going on? I don't know exactly, but it's kind of interesting. You know, there's a lot of people that are very confused. Like, the guy from Lu Xiaojun Barbell today was asking me... Uh-huh. All these questions. He's like, hey, what sort of shape is like Moradi and blah blah blah, and like, you know, I'm like, everyone's at, and like, you know, the guy from Iran is asking me, how is Tian Tao looking, how do you like, everyone's curious about everyone, because the thing is like, with all this like layoff between competitions, you know, people put up some training videos here and there, but there's just not that much information, like, you know, there's some people that are coming here that I've got no idea how they're going
to
look.
Yeah, for example, I didn't expect Danya to do 160, 73. Yeah.
I didn't know he was doing that.
No.
The thing is that Gregor's much better than I am at keeping up on, like, training hall videos and stuff that people post on Instagram. Like, you know, I'll be like, wow, I didn't even realize that guy was in this category now. And Gregor will be like, yeah, well, you didn't see the, like, 28 days ago on his story for 8 minutes, he had this video up of him doing, like, a 180 power snatch in this category? And I'm like, no, Gregor, I didn't see that. What in the world? Like, how do you see that in the first 8 minutes before he deleted it?
Right.
And you'll be like, oh, you know, three people screen captured it and sent it to me and blah, blah, blah. And I'll be like, no one screen captured and sent it to me because I guess people know I just don't.
Yeah.
Care about that. So anyway, Gregor always like has that information that I don't really bother following or necessarily caring about. Like, obviously, I'm on Instagram every day and following.
You have a good idea what's going on.
I have some idea, but you know about like some like idiosyncrasies of stuff that I'm just like, all right, I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the you know, the lack of information about certain lifters is definitely a bigger factor at this meet than I've ever seen before. Like, there's a lot of people confused about who's coming, what sort of shape are they in. You know, a lot of them are coming back off of injuries, you know, like, you know, Lee Dai-in and you know, Moradi and all these people are coming back off of injuries and people are kind of curious what they'll look like. And, you know, Tian Tao had an elbow injury too or something, I think.
Some surgery.
Yeah, I don't really know. Like, people say, like, oh, someone got surgery. I'm like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Who knows? The bigger question is what is IWF going to do with the whole qualification period change?
Yeah.
The ineligibility. Because some continentals don't even happen until after the Olympics, the Oceania.
To me, the whole lack of information from the IWF on this is, like, just unbelievably embarrassing.
Yeah.
I mean, because
a year ago, they knew, or it was foreseeable that this is going to happen with the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, I would say maybe in, like, April of 2020, it's understandable to not have it all figured out.
Yeah.
Because April of 2020 was a very, you know, rapidly changing time throughout the world of, you know, new things happening. There was, you know, it wasn't clear, like, were vaccines going to happen? Was this going to happen? Was, you know, countries were, like, you know, shutting borders and this, like, a lot of things were changing. But by the summer of 2020... you kind of knew how this was going to play out. Like, I could have predicted most of what has happened
Since
summer 2020.
And it seems like IWF did not plan for this at all. Like
there's been no good communication.
Yeah, no communication. They planned for
in-person. Well, no, there's been communication, but there's been no good communication. It's been like, hey, we're doing. They were like, here's our new system. Now you have to do one meet after the pandemic, and you know, blah blah blah. This and like you know, it was kind of like a hastily revised system that was like kind of poorly thought out.
Yeah.
And didn't account for the fact that what if the competition that person could go to was moved until after Rio?
Yeah.
Which has happened.
Which has happened now. So the Oceania people...
So, you know, they can't... And to me, it's just... It would be really embarrassing in a lot of ways to me if they like came out after this all happened and they're like, those weren't required.
And that's the rumor that we heard. Like, one rumor that's going around is that none of these, like, Europeans, Asian Championships, is going to count towards qualification. Again, it's just a rumor.
And keep in mind, people are... people are taking significant risks in a lot of ways. Not necessarily maybe for themselves, because, you know, someone like, you know, a 24-year-old healthy weightlifter... is probably not at big risk of having that bad of a case of COVID. You know, people are always like, oh, you know, well, there's a risk. You know, young people have died, but, like, I understand that, but it's they're not at any, like, really significant risk to their, like, short-term or really even long-term health. Like, if you look at the people who tend to have long-term problems, it's relatively unlikely. And I'm not... Impossible is different than unlikely, but it is very unlikely. So... I'm not even saying that, but who knows? Maybe some of these people, like, live with someone who is at risk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, the IWF shouldn't be making people take these, like, crazy levels of risks for their family and this and that if it's not even going to be required. You know what I mean? And I would understand a little bit if they'd said, well, you know what, for anti-doping reasons and blah, 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 we do have to have an in-person competition or this or that. But, like, you know, they haven't clearly explained how that's going to work for Oceania and other people, you know? So it's just, it's a very, very poorly communicated system at this point.
Yeah.
And, like, in a lot of ways, poorly thought out, too, I would say. Like, it's just, you know, they needed to think about how this would work with all the travel restrictions that are going on. And so, to me, like, I think the IWF has really, like, let the weightlifting world down with this. And not just the fans, but, like, the athletes more so than anyone.
The people that matter the most, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, people are doing some crazy things. Like even during the... start of the pandemic, people were doing crazy things. Like Julius, you know, I don't know if people know who Julius is, but Julius is one of Heidi's coaches / boyfriend.
Yeah.
And so Julius told me that they had booked last minute tickets like a year ago to Colombia to go to a meet there that was like a last minute.
He told me about this, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. What happened was Asians got canceled.
Yeah.
And he, in a panic...
And they were like, oh shit, now we can't qualify Heidi for the Olympics, which is a big deal.
Yeah, no, a really big deal.
It's like the purpose of what she's doing in life.
Yeah, exactly. That's like, that like is what matters to her.
Yeah.
And so, they spent like over $5,000 to book these crazy, like, four flight, like, tickets from... I think it was from Malaysia, actually. I think they were in Malaysia at the time, and they've been in Malaysia ever since.
Yeah.
But they booked these crazy, insane flights to go to, I don't remember where it was. It was one of the, it might have been like Bogota or Cali.
Maybe.
But somewhere in Medellin. It was somewhere in Colombia that they booked these flights to, I want to say. Oh, was it Ecuador? Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's somewhere in South America. They booked these crazy flights for this meet because they were in a panic over Asians being canceled. And no one had told them from the IWF. Hey, by the way, like, just relax. Don't book yourself on anything. Like, you're not going to have another required meet. Like, or you'll have to do it later. It's not going to be this one.
It was just silence.
There was just silence from the IWF, which was I thought was completely embarrassing that it was like that bad. And there's all these people panic booking this stuff. Like, oh, and Guo did something similar. Guo was ready to go to that meet. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know that, but Guo was going to go to Colombia as well.
Wow.
And they were all in this panic because of the Asians being canceled, and they thought they needed a meet. And then it just gets canceled, and I don't know if Julius ever got his money back for that.
Oh, shit, dude.
I know that I talked to him months later, and he had not gotten his money back.
Oh, man.
Now, maybe he got it eventually.
Uh-huh.
So I've not followed up with him recently, because I wasn't going to be like, hey, buddy, did you get your money back?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, I wasn't like, I'm going to keep asking him about a sore subject. I think I asked him once or twice and then dropped it. But,
okay.
You know, that's like just embarrassing. And if you think about it now, like, for instance, Max Lang is planning on going to Colombia.
As are many other people, yeah.
And as are, you know, quite a few other people. I know Lulu, I think, from Denmark said she might be going. Then some other people have said they were going. And so there's people planning on flying in from around the world to Colombia for this weightlifting meet for the sole reason of Olympic Games. No one is going because they're like, hey, I want to travel to Colombia during this pandemic.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with Colombia. I like Colombia. I've been there several times, and I've enjoyed every time, except for the humidity in Cartagena. I don't really like that, but other than that, I really like it. But, you know, but I assure you that Max Lang is not going there because he's like, wow, great trip.
No.
He's going there for
right now,
Olympic reasons.
He's stressing, okay, I don't have enough time to prepare the due normal preparation cycle. Because it's like 5 weeks from now. From 5 weeks from your...
Yeah, it's not too far. Like,
yeah. It's just, it's hard on the body. He has to cut a lot of weight. It's, like, not healthy. Obviously, sports is not healthy, but this is, like... It's avoidable, and it's unnecessary to make people do that.
Yeah,
with enough planning.
Yeah, he and other people, I would say, are doing something that, you know, might or might not matter, might or might not be required.
Yeah,
you know, who knows exactly what they're going to say for the system? Because if they tell the people from Oceania, oh, yeah, we'll just like multiply out your scores to pretend like you had. You know, like they could be like, "Oh, we're gonna extrapolate your other scores to pretend you had a meet now or whatever." Like, how is that fair if that puts in someone over someone from Europe who, if they had their scores extrapolated, would be, you know,
on top of them.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there could be situations where this could be like very, very poorly done if it's not well thought out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a big thing if someone gets an Olympic spot over someone else because of, like, someone from the IWF just doesn't feel like thinking about it. Or I don't even know, like, why this is so... You know, and they always have an excuse whenever I talk to someone about this. It's always like, oh, well, we're not allowed to change it because we need to, like, get approval from the IOC.
That's the most common rebuttal I hear.
Yeah, it's always, like, something like, oh, well, it's because of the IOC. It's not us. It's the IOC.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, listen... Screw the IOC. Just say it, and if the IOC later tells you no, then put it on the IOC. Be like, this is what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
This is what we planned on doing. This is what we submitted to the IOC, and we apologize, but the IOC rejected it.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so what I would do is I would say, put out what you're going to do, and say, by the way, everyone, this is pending IOC approval.
Okay.
We can't for sure say that this is 100%, but this is pending IOC approval. Don't just stay radio silent until the IOC has reviewed it and approved it. Tell people this is the plan. IOC is going to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
We hope they say yes.
Yeah. I mean, the leadership completely failed. Even starting at the pandemic, still planning to do the in-person meetings. And
yeah, that's the other thing, too. The IWF is always like, oh, you know, well, we can't possibly hold a meeting unless everyone in the world, like, flies to Switzerland and, like, sits in a room together, like, you guys don't know how to do Zoom?
Yeah, it's...
I mean, to be fair, they might not know how to do Zoom. Like, I wouldn't put it past them to not know how to do Zoom. And the other thing is I should mention, is that some of the people on the IWF are very competent, but there's a bunch that aren't, is really what it comes down to. Like, it's not every single person at the top of the IWF who is incompetent. It's just that there's enough incompetent ones who are not so concerned with actually doing this the right way, who are essentially screwing the sport up for everyone.
And it's part of how the IWF has grown over the last, like, four decades.
Yeah.
It's just set up in a very poor way.
Yeah. I don't know. Hopefully, I don't have too much hope with the way that they keep disbanding everything that's trying to help them.
Yeah.
But hopefully, at some point, the IWF will get their shit together and
it would be great.
Be like a much better, you know, governance. I don't really believe it, though. Like, to be honest, I'm a big skeptic that this is going to, like, end well.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm not booking any tickets for Paris.
I'm not booking any tickets for Paris. I mean, and for you, it's like a train ride. But I would not put much money on this ending well, you know, put it that way. But, I mean, I would love for it to end well because obviously I have incentive for that. And I would love to see the sport, you know, and all the athletes involved. And, I mean, I just think about, like, all these, like, youth athletes I see participating from all sorts of countries that have given, like, you know, 10 years of their life or more.
Yeah.
You know, these, like, 18-year-olds that started training when they were 8, and, like, they could easily be facing a situation where, like, their whole career is just, like, taken away from them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't feel that bad for someone like, oh, you know, Lasha or whatever. Like, and Lasha's going to have multiple, you know, Olympic golds, world records, world championships. Like, he could retire and be famous in Georgia and, you know, be fine. But there's a lot of people that have a lot riding on the Olympics and, you know, it would be a shame to see that all kind of fall apart. So hopefully the IWF gets their shit together.
Yeah. And on that note, thank you for listening. This was the first edition of the Tashkent podcast series.
/ rant.
/ Yeah. I mean, that's the AG podcast.
Yeah. ATG rant.
Yeah. Do you want to put in, like, some kind of Easter egg at the end, or do we do it maybe at a different podcast? Maybe just, let's not do it now. Let's think about it.
I mean, I'll say this. If anyone... first of all, when's this going to be posted, and like, where exactly does it get posted?
Probably on...
Patreon and...
No, Patreon? Like, on the podcast.
Just on the podcast?
Just the podcast.
Okay. So, put it this way. Anyone who... I'm trying to think... Because I want to do a contest where people want to submit comments. Where can people submit comments that would be a valid place for a contest entry?
Allthingsgym.com.
Okay, so on the podcast
post, make a post for this podcast?
On the comments under that.
Okay.
All right, so here's what I'm willing to say. Before, because I need to give people some time to look at this.
Yeah.
So before, I'm going to go with the...
Please don't make it something where I have to send people stuff.
No. And it's nothing like that.
Thank you.
I would have to send people stuff.
Okay.
So this is how it's going to work. I'm trying to think of the deadline for entry. That's what I'm kind of struggling with.
Huh.
But I want to say, like, 2 days into the competition.
Okay.
So basically, before the last lift of the second day of competition, whatever time that is.
Okay? You have to figure it out.
So, and by the way, so the first day of competition is the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
We're recording this late at night on the 15th in Uzbek time. So it's kind of like midday in the U.S. On the 15th. The first day of the competition is the 17th. The second day of competition is the 18th. So this will be sometime mid... It's roughly 72 hours from now. So this is a 72-hour PCR test.
This explanation's already so long out.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there anybody listening?
Well, there's probably no one listening, but that'll make it easy for the people.
Bernie, he's listening.
So what I'm going to say is people can guess any total for Miso.
Okay.
Sohrab.
Okay.
Kianoush. Ali Davoudi. The super from Pakistan. I'm not sure exactly how to, like, new butt. I'm not sure exactly how to say his name. So those five people. So
yeah,
I just want to reiterate that Maradi, Rostami,
Miso,
Ali Davoudi, or Nubut. Actually, you know what? I'm going to add in Tian Tao. Sorry. So I'm going to add a 6. And the reason is I'm trying to put people towards the end.
Okay.
I'm not trying to have people need to guess like Shizhe Yang that's going to happen right after that. Mm-hmm. I want some like time for people to see what's going to happen.
Okay.
So you can guess any one of those 6 people.
Yeah.
And I'm not asking for Snatch. I'm not asking for Clean and Jerk. I'm asking for their total.
Yeah.
Okay. Whoever is closest to any one of those 6 totals. And by the way, you can only guess one.
Uh-huh.
You can't guess all 6. You can choose the person you want to guess. Whoever is the closest, and there's no rule about going over, going under, anything like that. Like, you know, literally whatever your number is different from their end total.
Yeah.
Is how close you are. Whoever's the closest is going to get a custom made ATG tote bag.
Wow.
Okay. Now Gregor will post a picture of his custom made tote bag on the podcast page.
Yeah.
This is going to be custom. It's going to be like customized to you, and you're going to get some choices in the colors.
Wow.
And I'm going to put in some extra touches for whoever this is.
Yeah.
This also comes with free US shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone outside the US wins it, it will get thrown in for free to your next order, or you could pay for shipping. I'm not going to pay for these are kind of expensive and heavy to ship. I'm not necessarily going to pay for worldwide shipping. It's free US shipping, or it gets thrown in for free with any outside the US order,
mm-hmm.
including a $6 shipping order. So, okay. you know, this isn't necessarily a big financial commitment if they don't want it to be.
Yeah.
And it'll get thrown in for free, or you could just pay the actual shipping cost, whatever that may be. And that'll be wildly different whether you're in, like, Australia or Canada or Europe or whatever. And so you're going to get that customized thing, and you have to do it right. If you mess up your comment, if you guess 3 people...
Yeah, you're out.
You're out. Even if you get it... If you have all 3 are spot on, you're out.
And only leave one comment.
Yeah. Can people, like, edit and delete their own comments?
No.
No? Okay, no, good.
I would see that.
Well, let's you can't edit or delete your comment.
Yeah.
And if you guess someone who's not in the list, you're out.
Yep.
If you do any of these things, you're out. If Gregor can see that you commented under 6 names from the same IP, or it's clear that you're the same person,
yeah.
you're out. All that stuff. Don't cheat. Any form of cheating that, you know, don't dope.
Yeah.
You know, none of that stuff.
You're getting banned.
You're getting WADA banned. You know, so all that stuff. But anyway, if anyone has made it to here, guess one of those 6 people before the last lift of the second day, which is going to be on the evening of the 18th Tashkent time. Figure out whatever time that is for you. Good luck.
This podcast was brought to you by the AGG Patreon. Thank you, supporters, friends, and family, for keeping the ship running throughout the pandemic year. It's been fun to being able to do that through the pandemic. And yeah, before this gets long, goodbye.